Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and brought to you just before the night session is due to take place on the Arthur Ashe Arena with Mr. Novak Djokovic due to come out second on against Joe Wilfried Tsonga and Caroline Wozniacki's playing before that against Anastasia Savastova. My name is David Law from BBC Radio 5 Live. I'm joined, of course, by Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport, and we come to you from in the BBC Radio 5 Live commentary booth, and we are between sessions right now, looking out onto the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, the biggest court in the world, 23,700 blue seats and an enormous roof up above, which is pulled over because it's humid, it's cool, it's windy today, and there's been a bit of rain in the air as well. I'll be coming back on at the end of this show to talk about the Djokovic-Tsonga match and the Wozniacki-Savastova match. But Catherine Whittaker, I think, might have just been given a bit of a night off. So we're going to have our little chat first, and then we'll review the evening session. Catherine Whittaker, first and foremost, it's rather calmer situation we find ourselves talking to each other now than when you were walking into a tree last night.
Which you said in a message to me after that recording was one of your career highlights.
Podcast career highlights, unquestionably. I'm telling you, I wish you'd been there, all of you, and there's thousands of you. I wish you'd been stood there right then. Anyway, Catherine, it got my home back for all those times when I've messed up. Today's matches that have just gone, I mean, frankly, pretty straightforward, really. I didn't get to see all of the Vinci against Kerber match, but the first set, Vinci's slice and dice game was doing to Kerber what it does to so many players and did to players last year, including Serena Williams. She had a set point, but Kerber dug it out. And once she dug it out, Vinci's legs had gone. And this is just another example to me of the mental strength of Angelique Kerber.
Yeah, she's a champion now, isn't she? Those are the sorts of things that define a champion, getting out of those situations. I saw a tweet from her which reminded me. She said, oh, great to be back in the semi-finals here where it all began in 2011. She reached the semi-finals here she was 92 in the world, something like that. Certainly outside, around about the top 100, I think it was 92 in the world, reached the semi-finals here. So and hasn't been back in the semi-finals since then.
Of course, that's right. I forgot that. I remember it was the year that I'm trying to think of the year who actually won that. Was it Sam Stosur who won it that year? I think it was.
Was Sam Stosur 2011? Yeah.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And because I remember the first time I ever heard of Angelique Kerber or really took notice was, I think she beat Kim Clijsters, and then Clijsters was asked who would win out of Kerber and Lisicki, and Clijsters picked Kerber. And I remember thinking, crikey, that's surprising, because Lisicki, you know, the big hitter and all this sort of thing. But Clijsters was really rich in her praise of Kerber. But you're right, this is where it all started, you're right.
And 5 years later, it's taken her 5 years to get back here in the semi-finals here, and it's completely, I mean, everybody I speak to, I'm doing a lot of preview stuff with various members of the Eurosport team, and they seem to think it's a foregone conclusion that she and I'm quoting other people, or I'm paraphrasing other people. That is not a Catherine Whittaker statement. They seem to think it's pretty much nailed on that Serena and Kerber are going to fight it out for the world number one spot for this Grand Slam title on Saturday, and that would be just great.
It would be pretty awesome. I mean, there's still some good tennis to come before then, of course, because tomorrow, we'll preview it in a little while, we're going to have Simona Halep against Serena Williams. But, yeah, Kerber, I don't know. I mean, she'll be up against either the winner of... Well, it'll be the winner of Wozniacki and Sevastova, won't it? And I would have thought Wozniacki would have been favourite there, to be honest.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, they're both unseeded. Sevastova actually the higher ranked of the two, but that's pretty academic. Having seen Sevastova against Konta, I mean, it's not like she acquitted herself brilliantly. She guts it out very, very well, but she certainly showed signs of the stress and the nerves of the situation.
We would look if we were in that position.
She looked entirely human, yeah. I mean, she looked like she was going to burst into tears on numerous occasions, and it was only that Konta looked more like she was going to burst into tears. It was, yeah, well, we've covered in the podcast a couple of days ago what a weird match that was. So that didn't fill me with confidence necessarily that she can pull off another big win tonight, despite the fact that, you know, she's surprised us all so far in the tournament. But yeah, I mean, Wozniacki loves New York so much, doesn't she? This is the perfect place for her to come at this stage of her comeback. She looks completely at home.
That is, to me, the biggest surprise of the US Open this year. And there have been a few great stories, but I've seen a lot of Wozniacki over the last 12 months. I mean, even before this year, she wasn't playing anything like what she was when she reached the final here 2 years ago. She came into this tournament with no form, with no real even fitness. And this is somebody who relies on fitness for her game. She was 4-love and love 30 down against Svetlana Kuznetsova. And it was embarrassing what Kuznetsova was doing to her, just knocking her off the court. She dug in. And in that one match, she found some form. I mean, what a transformation. She now has that glow about her. If you look in her face, she thinks she's going all the way here. It is not impossible at all.
Yeah, and her trajectory is entirely upward. So I looked at each of her match time lengths. The longest match she played was that first round match against Taylor Townsend, the first ever match on the grandstand court. I think that one was 2 hours and a quarter, something like that. She was lucky to scrape out of that one. Had Townsend had a bit more big match experience under her belt, she probably should have been the winner. But since then, she's sort of taken that slice of luck or whatever it was that got her through that, and she's completely run with it and improved with every match. And well, that's exactly what you want to be doing in a Grand Slam tournament, isn't it?
No, it really is. After the Vinci against Kerber match, we had Luca Puy up against Gael Monfils, and another straight sets win for Monfils, 15 sets in a row now. And he's just quietly... I mean, you've been marking our card about this for a while, about this new coaching relationship, because you've been to clay court events that he's done well at. You've had a chance to speak to him. I haven't seen that much of him, but it's bearing out, because we did that match today on 5 Live Sports Extra, commentated on that, and there was never really a moment during that match. I realised that Luca Puy probably hit a brick wall today after three consecutive five-set matches, but even so, there were no dips and troughs. There was no drama. There was no Monfils-like element to the match.
That's it. Well, when you hit a brick wall, like Puy understandably probably did today, you need your opponent to give you something, don't you? You need them to give you something to feed off, to find the energy, to find the spark, because you can't quite create it yourself because you're flat. And Monfils did not give him anything, you know, even when there was the pause at the end of the second set, and you thought, wow, maybe, you know, this could be a game changer, this could be the sort of thing that would cause Monfils of old to lose concentration or shift in momentum. Absolutely nothing. He came out and served a fantastic service game, and everything. I mean, he's still, and yet he's still, he's doing that and still doing the Monfils stuff of old, the, you know, incredible gets, the incredible athleticism. I mean, if, yeah, he's really a force to be reckoned with. Really, we should start talking about him as a contender.
And he will face the winner of Djokovic against Songa. So tomorrow, we've got an absolutely full slate of matches again in the afternoon. It's quite interesting that Murray against Nishikori is the afternoon match. I wonder how that was decided by the American television networks. I mean, it's very good for us as a British audience. For instance, we are live at 7 o'clock UK time with our entire national show on BBC Radio 5 Live, 5 Live Sport, presented from here at 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening, because Andy Murray against Kei Nishikori is the daytime match. So I don't know whether it's elements like that that have made that decision, but it's fantastic news from a profile perspective in Britain and in Europe in that regard. But that has the potential to be a really good match, actually, because Nishikori, he keeps getting to this sort of stage of every tournament. He keeps running in to Djokovic or to Murray and ending up coming off second best. But his actual ability, his level, is not far away in terms of his ball striking, but he's beating everybody else as long as he's fit.
Well, he went 6 love up in a tie break yesterday against Ivo Karlovic. So Andy Murray's 141 mile per hour serve probably isn't going to scare him that much. Yeah, it's funny. I saw Nishikori's practice earlier. I saw the tail end of it with Michael Chang, and sort of pretty ordinary practice. And then at the end of it, Nishikori sat down on the chair. Chang came over to him, and he was giving him, you know, it looked like a dressing room speech from a sports movie. He was sat down on the court in front of him. He was doing lots of arm movement. I think he was actually mapping out the court on his arm and showing him, you know, court positioning and stuff like that. And I wish I could have listened in to what they were saying. I was trying to get the cameraman to subtly put the microphone as close as possible. And then he started showing him a video on his phone, and I was getting the cameraman to zoom in, and he said, oh, it's just cartoons. He was joking. It wasn't cartoons. But I wanted to know whether he was showing him a video of Murray or of himself. I realise this is a very irritating anecdote because of the incomplete information, but there was definitely intense chat going on. And then, behind me, Ivan Lendl rocks up with Jamie Delgado and Andy Murray, and Lendl goes, we were booked on practice court one, weren't we? Which is where Nishikori was. Lendl just marches on over to Michael Chang and goes, oh, in the politest way, or as politely as Lendl is capable of, says, if you don't mind finishing up your intense chat about tactics for tomorrow evening, I've got to have a practice session with my guy that's going to beat your guy now.
Brilliant. Did Chang say, tell you what, why don't we have a hit ourselves and I'll do an underarm serve? So before all of that takes on, hey, we need to have a word about Anna Konyu, who we didn't get to speak about last night in our race to the bus when you were running into trees, because Anna Konyu was spectacular. She knocked out Agnieszka Radwańska with some of the most devastating power hitting I think we've seen in a long time from a new player on the circuit. And I think she took a few people by surprise. She's a U.S.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
US Open junior champion, but she's been struggling with injuries now for a couple of years. It's kind of like getting that body used to going from juniors to seniors. And I just held on to, as well as the spectacular shot making that we could all see, I held on to something that ESPN's Pam Shriver said last night, which is that she hasn't seen anybody come onto the court age 17 or 18 and hit the ball like that since Venus or Serena.
I saw that you tweeted that quote from Pam Shriver. It was very interesting. I'm not obviously not going to be disagreeing with Pam Shriver, but that tweet that you put out quoting Pam Shriver came out at almost exactly the same time as Dinara Safina tweeted that she'd been out watching some of the girls' junior matches here, and she was struck. She thought the level was significantly lower than when she was a junior.
They always say that, don't they?
Yeah, it was really interesting. And I know Konyu isn't a junior anymore, but she's only 18. She could be still be playing in the juniors if she wanted to be. And I thought, hang on a second, if this is what, you know, the juniors or the recent juniors are looking like, then I'm not sure what you're talking about, Dinara.
The big question is whether we're going to get another Luca Pui situation here where he just couldn't do it again, and can she back it up? That's the big question mark.
Well, Pui had several back-to-back five-set matches. I mean, Konyu did not expend too much energy. 4-4 against Radvanska, so physically she should be fine. It's whether she's able to muster. It's seeing people come out flat, isn't it? Flat seems to be a bit of a buzzword this tournament, having to follow up big victories. But I think she's young enough and excitable enough. It's all new and big and I mean... I suppose Pliskova doesn't give you much, does she? She doesn't give you much in terms of
energy. Well, that's the problem. Also, I mean, on one element, it could be beneficial if Pliskova comes out and is missing a lot, but she can also take the racket out of your own hands. And we're yet to see how Konyu will handle it when she's not playing somebody who's a retriever more. So it'll be big hitting. It may be very erratic. We may see a lot of errors in that match. I think the winner and error counts will be high, unforced errors. So that's the afternoon. The evening session sees Serena Williams against Simona Halep. Simona Halep certainly played some of the best tennis I've seen in the summer, but then she's also thrown in a couple of terrible performances out of the blue. She's had good matches against Serena in the past. But if Serena plays well, it doesn't really matter, it seems, most of the time. I'm fascinated to see whether Darren Cahill and herself can come out with a strategy that can discomfort Serena.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a great match. I think Halep will show up. I think she'll challenge Serena, and I think Serena will win, and it'll be just the test she needs to on this route to 23, or at least to the final against Kerber, which people that know more about tennis than me seem to be predicting. I don't expect the horror show Halep to show up. I don't expect it to be a dud. I expect it to be a very good match and for Halep to give it her absolute all. I just expect Serena to be better because she is better.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. And then the final match of the day, Juan Martín Del Potro against Stan Wawrinka, which I think could be a party of an atmosphere. I think it could be amazing. I think there's going to be loads of Argentinian fans in. I think they're going to really go into the trenches. I think it's going to be pulsating stuff. It'll probably be an absolute dud now that I've said all that, because I've got a couple wrong this week. But, you know, if they play to their potential, it could be spectacular. I just want to see one full-on Wawrinka backhand to Del Potro forehand rally of about six shots to see what happens to the ball. Imagine it would just explode.
I think you'll probably see that, David. Yeah, I think absolute bang on right decision to put that as the night session match. Without question, that is a night session match. And the fact that it works out brilliantly for British audiences for Andy Murray is also great. I mean, it's a no-brainer. That is a night session Arthur Ashe tennis match.
And who's winning it?
I think Del Potro's winning it.
Me too. I don't like all this agreeing. I've got to sort that out. Anyway, that's about it, I think, for today's tennis podcast with Catherine. But I'm going to be back in a little while to talk about Novak Djokovic and Caroline Wozniacki and Anastasia Savastova and, of course, Djokovic's opponent, Joe Wilfried Tsonga, because that's going to be the night session here. I'll be back with you in a little while. Well, that was all a bit of an anticlimax, wasn't it? Novak Djokovic going through straight sets, needing only two, though, ultimately, against Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who retired after losing the first two, 6-2, 6-3. I mean, he was never really in the match, was he? There were one or two flashes. I think he got a break back at one point, but he just seemed to be stuck between attack and patience and didn't really do either. And a lot of that, I think, is also because of how well Djokovic is starting to play again. I mean, I think people sometimes forget that when he plays his best tennis, it impacts the opponents, so they can't actually do what they want to do. I think a lot of people say, oh, why isn't Tsonga doing this? Or why isn't Tsonga doing that? And sometimes actually it's because Djokovic isn't really letting him do that. But I also think mentally there's a major barrier now for a lot of these players trying to beat certainly Djokovic and increasingly Murray. A few bad things happen on the court that the challenger doesn't like, and they lose all confidence. Obviously, with Tsonga hurting his knee, that just compounds that issue, and he decided after two sets he couldn't carry on. I mean, we all hope that he's going to be better very soon. I know he's had a number of issues over the course of the year, and this is another one. But it's a real shame. I mean, that's three matches that Djokovic has not completed. One of them he finished after six games. One of them he didn't take to the court at all. One of them his opponent. And one of them Tsonga has retired after two sets. So here's Djokovic into the semi-finals of the US Open having played two complete matches. It's unheard of as far as I'm concerned. I can't think of anything comparable in my recollection, certainly in the sport. And where does that leave Djokovic? I mean, he is fresh. We've just had him come into the press conference. I've just been listening to him talk in there. And he said, to be honest, as bad as he feels for Joe and the other opponents, and he was very generous and hopes they get well soon, he said for him, this has been good because it's rested his body. And he feels now, he said, I feel nearly 100%, which is bad news for everybody. I think the one thing about Monfils is that he has a game that can go toe-to-toe physically if he's not injured himself. I mean, he looked fine today, but he's a guy who's been injured himself in the past as well. So whether he can impose himself on Djokovic is another matter. But the guy is in good form. He's won 15 sets out of 15. Nobody's put a mark on Monfils yet. And that'll be a bigger test, certainly, I think, than he's had to this point. Djokovic, ultimately, though, I still can't really see anybody coming between Djokovic and Murray in the final. I think Del Potro is capable at his very best of upsetting all of that, but obviously Stan Wawrinka at his very best is, but I don't think Wawrinka is at his best, and I think Del Potro is likely to just start running out of gas a little bit. One thing I have asked you in a pole vault, which, you know, I tell you what, why don't we just run about 25 pole vaults, given that Catherine's not here? She's gone home for the night. I'm sitting here in a commentary box overlooking the Arthur Ashe Stadium with the roof on, you know, empty court. We could just do pole vault after pole vault, and Catherine could do nothing about it. Should we do that? I'll tell you what, let's just do one and then see how we go. So here we go. I have asked, based on the two and a bit matches Novak Djokovic has played, how close does he look to 100%? And I've asked, you know, is he right at 100%? Is he 90%? Is he between 75 and 90? Or is he less than 75? And actually, the highest vote so far has come in for between 75 and 89%. I think I'd probably go 90 plus, which is another popular choice between all of you. I think it's close. I think he's around 80 or 90% of his absolute best. Obviously, it's you can't really measure somebody's form and fitness in that way. But just in terms of watching the matches he's played, that's how it seems to me. And I suspect he will go up another couple of notches in both of the next two rounds. And if Murray brings what he brought against Dimitrov, well, it's a few days away, isn't it? But it's one to really look forward to if it does happen. Now, so tomorrow we will be starting with Anna Konyu against Karolina Pliskova, followed by Kei Nishikori against Andy Murray. Reminder, live commentary if you're in the UK on BBC Radio 5 Live from 7 o'clock on 5 Live. Then the evening session matches Serena Williams against Simona Halep, followed by Juan Martín Del Potro against Stan Wawrinka. Lots to look forward to tomorrow. Loads of good doubles matches as well, and including Martina Hingis and Coco Vandeweghe in the doubles quarter-final. That's on the grandstand court. The top seed in the men's doubles, Pierre-Hugues Hébert and Nicolas Mahut, are in action as well. In fact, Coco Vandeweghe's got a busy day tomorrow. She's playing twice in the doubles. Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez are in quarterfinal action as well, up against Chris Guccione and Andre Sarr. Remember, it was Andre Sarr, wasn't it, who ruined things for the Murray brothers at the Olympics. So that's an interesting one to follow. But that pretty much wraps it up for day 9 at the US Open. It's probably been the most underwhelming day that we've had so far. Pretty disappointing afternoon matches, fairly both straight sets, and then two really underwhelming evening matches, because Caroline Wozniacki, her opponent Anastasia Savastova, really struggled physically in the match. She turned her ankle after about three games. She was nearly double bageled. I actually think she did incredibly well to carry on at all, but she lost 6-love, 6-2. So Wozniacki's story goes on. Hey, a couple of good little rumours coming out in the Wozniacki press conference, by the way. First of all, she sort of commented on apparently some comments that her father has made in the Danish press about possibly retiring in the next 2 years, either in 2016 or 2017. She wasn't going to confirm or deny, but she wasn't exactly denying it either. She says, basically, I'll let you know in good time. But, you know, it did sound like that might be the case. And she also dropped into conversation how the reason she isn't going on holiday with people like Angelique Kerber and Agnieszka Radwanska anymore, one of the reasons is because Radwanska is getting married, which was news to us all. But anyway, all the gossip in the press conferences. That's what's happened today. Listen, you lot, thanks for listening. We will be back with another one hopefully tomorrow if we can find the time. We're enjoying bringing them to you. We hope you're enjoying listening. Do follow us on Twitter at Tennis Podcast, on Facebook as well. We're on there. Leave us a review on iTunes, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.